From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi. And welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Today's guest on Naps Chat is Naps Executive Vice President Chuck Molitor. Welcome to Naps Chat, Chuck.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be back on Naps Chat.
Before we start our discussion about the upcoming Naps Legislative Conference, the 2023 Legislative Training Seminar, which will take place in about a month, I want to discuss some timely issues that are percolating rather vigorously right now. First is the jump start to this year's legislation to repeal the government pension offset and the windfall elimination provision. The measure, which not coincidentally bears the same number as last year's bill, was introduced by Representatives Garrett Graves, Republican of Louisiana, and Representative Abigail Spanberger, Democrat of Virginia. As the President's Day recess started, the bill carried the names of 158 bipartisan co-sponsors, 111 Democrats and 47 Republicans. I want to come back to the bill number for just a moment to share some insight and how the bill is able to have the same number as last Congress. Many NAPS members have asked how this happens. Was it a coincidence or was it planned? Well, it was planned. The prime co-sponsor of a bill could ask the House parliamentarian to reserve a particular bill number, so long as the leadership of either party has not designated that number for some other bill that needed to be introduced at about the same time that the windfall elimination provision bill and government pension offset bill was introduced. So they were able to reserve the bill number. So that's just a bit of legislative
trivia. Which is good
trivia
for us, because it carries that over.
Oh, yeah. And also, right, it's easy for our members and for members supporting the legislation to very quickly pull up the bill number in their data bank, the memory data bank, and also for members of Congress that associates that bill number with a particular issue.
Right.
That being said, Chuck, we've been fighting this repeal since the mid-1980s. That's more than 40 years. Is it time to throw in the towel?
Well, you're right about it's been a long time. It's seen as an unfair piece of legislation that affects the wrong people. Is it time to throw in the towel? No, because as we saw with postal reform, while that wasn't 40 plus years, it was 15, 16 years of work that went into getting that altered. So some of these things take a long time. It's great to see the bipartisan support. We've always had great bipartisan co-sponsors. It's just when we get down to the votes, it just never seems to happen. So we've just got to keep pushing for it, keep lobbying for it. And if there's a compromise that might evolve out there at some point from it, we have to be involved in that to see how that would affect, you know, our members and members of our federal community.
Just something, as I recall when this originally, I mean, this ages me a bit, when this whole issue came first into the foreground was when Congress started putting a spotlight on the Social Security program itself and said it was at risk. So one of the fixes at that point in the late 1970s, early 1980s, was the institution implementation of the government pension offset and windfall elimination provision. So I would say, in addition to fighting for this legislation, now that there is more attention, particularly in some segments of Congress, to the Social Security system, that being proactive on this will protect the benefits in the future for people that are looking at the federal postal workforce to try to save Social Security once again.
Right. And as those of us who watched the President's State of the Union address will certainly know, the issue of Social Security came up between the president and some members of Congress, and clearly he wrangled them into agreeing that there'd be no issues with Social Security and Medicare. So I don't want to say it solves the problem or settles the issue, but I think we've got to take this piece of legislation away from that conversation and focus on the people that are most affected by that, which are probably not the people that maybe the original intent was, but it hurts a lot of people that it shouldn't hurt. and something we should keep, as we said, we got to keep pushing on it. It might take one or two or three or four, who knows what it's going to take. But one thing we can't be is putting time frames on legislation that we have to pass by a certain timeline or else we just give up on it. We can't give up on it. It's too important to many of our members and many of the people who worked in the federal service. So we'll keep pushing. We'll keep fighting. And again, if there's something that comes out of that, that can be maybe a reform of it, that gets the process started as a good first step, you know, we'll take a look at that and try to advance that as well.
You know, the GPO WEP repeal is a bipartisan issue.
Mm-hmm.
Last Congress, the lead was taken. One of the leads was taken by Rodney Davis, a Republican from Illinois. Unfortunately, he was defeated in a primary. Stepping up to the plate is another Republican, Congressman Garrett Graves from Louisiana. So there's a there is strong support for this repeal.
Absolutely. And but like I said, we've had strong bipartisan co-sponsorship of this legislation almost every year. And yet, when it gets to the point of calling for votes either in committee or on the floor of the House, something seems to get in the way of that. And understanding that the repeal of this would be considerable cost to the government. So we get that. We understand that. If cost is the issue, then okay, then let's work on something that would be maybe less costly, but still fix some of the issues, some of the problems down the road. So, you know, we'll keep looking for whether this can pass the House. Maybe this is the year it can pass the House with bipartisan support. If not, then we'll look for alternatives that might get the process started without ever giving up on the ultimate goal. But the key piece of it is we can't stop advancing this. We can't stop asking our people out there who worked in the Postal Service, who still work in the Postal Service or the federal government, to keep calling and writing their congressional representatives to advance this legislation to fix this problem.
Pivoting to another issue, not necessarily a new issue, the National Association of Letter Carriers will be starting its scheduled collective bargaining over its members' pay and benefits very shortly, which means that EAS pay talks will start soon after the conclusion of NALC's negotiations, if I am not mistaken.
Yes.
As a matter of law, NAPS will be going into pay talks representing virtually all EAS-level postal employees, comprising postal supervisors, managers, and postmasters.
Yes.
Last year, the U.S. Court of Appeals concluded that the Postal Service violated the law, most notably in the area of the determination of pay comparability and pay differential. Could you talk about how that issue motivates NAPS to pursue passage of the Postal Supervisors and Managers Fairness Act, H.R. 594, this year?
Right. So the law says that within 45 days of the conclusion of negotiation with the largest union, which at this time is the NALC, the Postal Service should present to NAPS a proposal on pay. And that's been the model that's been followed for many years now. Our view of it is that that's not a hard, it doesn't have to be at that point after 45 days. We've asked the Postal Service, we believe we can open up those conversations much sooner than that, before the conclusion of pay consultations. They see it a little differently. So once that the pay agreement between the letter carriers and the Postal Service is ratified by the union, we'll have 45 days to receive some type of proposal from the Postal Service. But it gets back to legislation we had last Congress, and this Congress, H.R. 594, which would fix that process, which would allow us to have a better pay consultation process with the Postal Service to start earlier and to have a little bit of teeth into the process so that we're not just, you know, we've gone through this before, right? The basis of the lawsuit was that in 16 through 19, we could not get a fair agreement with the Postal Service on pay and benefit consultation. So we went through the entire process, and the most unfair piece of it is we had fact-finding panel, a neutral panel, that basically agreed with us on all points, and yet the Postal Service can still just reject that and then implement a pay package, which is what they did, which generated the lawsuit. So we want to fix that. H.R. 594 will do that. It doesn't, I don't think, damage the Postal Service in any way whatsoever. It just brings a little more common sense to it and a little more protection for us so that when we do engage in meaningful dialogue with the Postal Service this year and beyond, that we have a little bit of teeth in the process so that, you know, we just don't have to go through the entire process and the post office at the end of the day can just say, no, we're not going to do that. Here it is, take it or leave it type of thing. So it would fix a lot, I think, the problems that we have with the pay consultation process. And we're excited about the fact that we'll, based upon the court decision, be consulting for pay and benefit consultations for postmasters as well this time for the first time. So we're excited about that. And we'll do the best we can, as we always have done for our members in our pay consultations with the Postal Service. But 594, we'll be talking a lot about that at our legislative training seminar at the end of March, and we'll take that issue very strongly to the Hill.
Interestingly, in the court decision, and I want to focus in on that last point you made about representation of postmasters, is that doesn't the Court of Appeals did not make new law. They simply clarified mm-hmm. the existing law that had existed.
Right. That's right.
So,
which was always our interpretation.
Right.
But the Postal Service saw it differently. So the Court of Appeals, essentially, if you want to say that, lined up with our view of the law, which we think is clear.
It validated the interpretation of law that we have had for quite some time.
Correct.
I want to move on to another issue, and then that is last year Congress passed and President Biden signed into law legislation providing $3 billion for the Postal Service to modernize its obsolete and unsafe delivery fleet. Mm-hmm. Recently, certain members of Congress are seeking to claw back that money as part of a demand on a debt ceiling agreement. Mm-hmm. Is this something that we should be concerned about?
Well, absolutely, because the fleet, if those of us who worked in the Postal Service, who are working in the Postal Service, know that the fleet of vehicles is ancient. And we see almost every day a YouTube video of a LLV caught on fire somewhere. They're dangerous. They're hazardous. There has been an effort to get those vehicles replaced. Sometime within the next year or so, some of the new delivery vehicles will be rolling off the assembly line to replace these old dinosaurs. But you can't now say, hey, we want to replace the fleet, and then start taking the money back, because it's a matter of safety for all of our employees. So, yeah, it's something that's very concerning. I don't think the administration is willing to deal anything on the debt ceiling, but we have to keep vigilant on that. So we'll vigorously oppose anything that tries to claw back that $3 billion to modernize the postal fleet. It absolutely needs to be done for efficiency, but more importantly, for safety.
I guess my recommendation to the Postmaster General is spend that money pretty fast so it won't get held over your head.
Man, that's right. We worked hard to get that bill passed. So start doing it.
Also, earlier this month, a representative from the American Bankers Association testified before the House Financial Services Committee, at which time he not surprisingly stated his opposition to postal banking. However, the reason stated for his opposition was illuminating. He declared in his testimony, quote, "After the operational problems over the past 2 years and its philosophy of cutting services, the post office does not appear well positioned to deliver banking service." That is an interesting commentary about postal services and cutting services from someone outside of our postal family. Mm-hmm. While the American Banking Association representative spoke historically, do you think that implementation of like the delivery and sorting center initiative or other initiatives taken by the Postal Service that resulted in cutting services impacts the ability of the Postal Service to serve the American public?
Well, if nothing else, it gives organizations like American Banking Association another talking point to be against the Postal Service involved in banking, which they have long historically been opposed to. And he spent a lot of money in Congress to make sure that there's never any legislation that would promote postal banking. Although the SNDC issue hasn't been as transparent as we would like it to be, we don't really know the long-term implications of these offices where they lose their carriers and they go to a sortation center some maybe 30 miles away or so. Short-term, we're told, those offices will stay where they are. They're not going to close them, reduce hours, but you know, we just don't know what the long-term implications of that are, if that's going to hold long-term, because we don't have the transparency from the Postal Service on those types of issues as far as what the community needs to know or what our membership needs to know that work in those offices. But the American Banking Association, it gives them another talking point that, look, postal banking makes sense in so many ways, but most especially in these underserved areas. You know, there's areas of this country where there are no banks. There's not a bank to be found anywhere, yet there's a post office. So we can provide those services in those underserved communities that they can't get right now. And I think that's a benefit to the American public. It another benefit of what we can do as the Postal Service, what we can offer the American public. And all of these other issues around reduction of service, SNDCs, only adds to the conversation for those that want to oppose those things that we can do that are good for the American people.
Also, it raises concerns about when the Postal Service needs to diversify its product and service line because of the fall off of first class mail, that if the ABA's representation takes root somewhere, that could implicate the Postal Service providing other governmental services, because people say, hey, you know, you're cutting services, your postal services, so you can't offer these services.
Right, and there's no doubt that service, look, we all worked there for many years, and many of us listening to this still work there. It ain't what it used to be. The service is not what it was. So we know that. We see that. We understand that. So we've got to take that off the table. And our argument to the Postal Service is, we understand there's a need to modernize, a need to upgrade and update facilities in the fleet and so forth. That's why we fought so hard to get postal reform legislation passed. And they've begun to do that. And we support that kind of thing. What we're asking for in this SNDC process is transparency for our membership, as well as transparency for the American public, who largely does not know that this is going on. And again, it gives those organizations that oppose the Postal Service for a variety of reasons and a variety of different issues more talking points to use against us. And it just increases the conversation for them at, to me, an unnecessary level for us.
When I started the podcast, I mentioned that our legislative conference was only about a month away. How close are we to have everything finalized, and what should attendees expect?
I think we're very close on having it finalized. We're going to have a great agenda. We've got several lawmakers from the House and the Senate coming to speak with our group. We'll have a broad agenda to take to the Hill on some of our legislation that's important to us. So I think we can expect a great LTS. And one of the things we need to focus on this year is the newly elected freshman members of Congress, right? Many of those folks, although you and I met with a lot of them, Bob, in the campaign season, so they know who we are, but they might not know exactly what we do as an organization, what NAPS does, and who we are, and what we advocate for. So there's going to be a great deal of emphasis during LTS to educate these new freshman lawmakers, some 90 or so in the House and the Senate. That's a lot. So we're going to task those who come to LTS this year and beyond to educate these folks, as well as talk about our legislation, but educate them as to who we are, what we do, and then begin to open those lines of communication with them, because many of those people we supported in the campaign and won. So we've already got some advantage in that regard. So it'll be a full agenda, be a full day on the Hill on Tuesday after LTS, and then on Wednesday for many. So looking forward to it.
Let me back up. You said that we expect a lot of our elected leaders to attend, and I think as I looked at the list, this is probably one of the highest turnouts among sitting members of Congress that we've had in years. Could you share a little bit about who to expect?
And one thing I'm proud of, we always make sure we have a bipartisan mix, right? Because we don't just support one party over the other one. We support those that support NAPS and support the Postal Service. We have Congressman Pete Sessions, Ken Republican from Texas will be there early in the morning, as well as Congressman Jamie Raskin, who is the ranking minority member now on the Oversight Committee. Congressman Comer, who is now, when we saw him last year, he was the ranking member. He's now the chairman of the Oversight Committee in the House. He will also be there. An interesting freshman, Emilia Sykes from the Akron, Ohio area, is coming. You and I spoke with her near the very end of her campaign that she was told, or many believe, was not winnable. And we got involved in her campaign, and she won. So she's coming. She's a freshman legislator, as well as Senator Maggie Hassan, who we have a long history of support for. And she's been a long history of support for our issues on the Hill. So a great mix of bipartisan legislators coming to talk with us and hear from us. And it just makes it even that much more, I think, of an effective of a conference that way.
I'm going to just add that Pete Sessions, who you mentioned first, is the new chairman of the House Subcommittee on Government Operations and the Federal Workforce, which is the subcommittee chaired by Jerry Connolly in the previous session, and that our new good friend Amelia Sykes was one of the leading forces behind vote by mail in the state of Ohio.
Absolutely.
In the state legislature.
Yeah, I think folks will be very impressed with her. We were very impressed with her. I think she has a great future in the House.
We expect around 500 attendees to the conference. What will be their elevator pitch when they meet with their elected representatives and senators? What should our members focus on?
Right. Well, we're going to have the legislation. We're going to have part of our training on the day of the conference will be a training on how to talk to the freshman members of Congress, House, and Senate, so that we can have that educational piece of who we are and what we do and why we do what we do, as well as our typical legislation we'll be supporting on the Hill. So everybody will be armed with the talking points. They'll be armed with booklets to give to the members. They'll be armed with the economic impact statements that the Postal Service, to show them how economically viable the Postal Service is in their districts and the revenue that it generates them through taxes and so forth. So there's a lot of things we'll be talking about: the outreach, the legislative opportunities, and the educational piece. So it'll be a little bit different this year, because I think this is probably one of the biggest class of freshmen we've seen in the Congress, maybe in decades. So a little bit different focus on it and get the ball rolling with it. And they'll have a great send-off to get to the Hill and start advocating for us.
And there will be material posted on our website shortly before the conference. So not only people who are attending the conference,
absolutely,
but folks back home will be able to see and to use that information back home, which brings me to my final question. As you said, around 500 people, NAPS members, are going to be coming to the conference. We represent around 47,000 EAS-level employees. So the 46,500 who are not going to be able to travel to Washington, what would they be doing?
Well, look, we need everybody on these issues all in. Okay, so we do something that I think is somewhat unique for us, is that those people that want to talk to their legislators back home, right, we fund them to go to different events that they might have in their congressional districts or in their states, because they're home a lot more than they're in Washington, D.C., right? So, Bob, we go meet with them, we talk with them, and we support their campaigns, and they love to hear from us and see us. But nothing they love better than to talk to constituents. Constituents are votes. So anyone out there who has the opportunity to go to a legislator's fundraiser, meeting, town hall, whatever they're having, we encourage them to go. If there are some fees involved, oftentimes we can handle that for them. So we can keep making this pitch to them, not only here in D.C., but back home in their district. So everybody needs to realize, I think, that while the Postal Service listens to us, the future of the post office is on the Hill. And we've got to be players in that, all of us. We have to be involved in it, and we can never take our eyes off the prize. If we do, then that's where we lose. So It's one of the reasons why we're so heavily supportive of SPAC. When we talk about SPACs, the Supervisors Political Action Committee, we make it easy for people to donate to that. They can take right out of their pay or their annuity from the OPM to contribute to that. And it's one of the tools that we used, I think, so effectively last year to get the bill passed in the Congress and to get, I think, a very good group of members elected in the last midterms that are open to our issues, both Republicans and Democrats, because we support both parties. So we have to make that, I think, clearly understood why we need people to contribute to SPAC for the Political Action Committee side of it, the funding side of it, as well as their support in opening lines of communication with their congressional leadership so that we are at the forefront of influencing legislation and at the forefront of influencing the future of the post office.
Also, members of our NAPS members can make appointments in the congressman's district offices and treat
Absolutely.
That as a lobbying visit.
Absolutely.
Because issues come up not necessarily in early March or
That's
late
right.
March. They
and
come up throughout the year.
They will meet with you. If you're a constituent, you will get a meeting with someone in that office, preferably the congressman themselves or congressperson themselves. But certainly the legislative activity doesn't happen only in March and then we forget about it. It's an ongoing process throughout the years.
Chuck, I want to thank you for joining me today on this week's episode of NAPSChat. This has been NAPS
Absolutely.
Executive Vice President Chuck Molitor.
Thank you, Bob. I've enjoyed it, always.
Also, I want to thank NAPSChat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy NAPSChat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NAPSChat with your friends and colleagues. Until we meet again, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm going to bend right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going